You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Come from you, ghetto people, yeah. You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything that on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshie. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you wanted to do, should do, better do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But if it wasn't, I know you got it done, because the kind of brother and sister that you is, you don't play around. You get done. That's right. You go to work. Love that in you and keep on doing it, because we need that. We need that consistently. We must go to work. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradio.com. And we're very happy to be on this forum. But there are other programs on this forum as well, on Time for an Awakening Media. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to the archives. You go to timeforanawakening.com. Look for the red, black, and green lion with African Post, and there you will find previously recorded programs that are dated and titled, thanks to our good brother and friend, Brother Kwaku, who's on it. We appreciate that. Other programs on Monday, this evening, Acres of Diamonds. All times are going to give are Eastern Times. Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming from Philadelphia from 6 to 8. Right after Acres of Diamonds is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then on Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy, 7 p.m. on Thursdays. Relationships with Joy and Troy. And then on Friday, if it's Friday, and it's 8 p.m. Eastern. That's right, brothers and sisters. It's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Fridays, 8 p.m. until Saturday. Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. No, it ain't me. It's Sister POC and her program Revive from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sundays. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m. until it's time for an awakening once again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses at WeBuyBlack.com. They have laundry detergent, toothpaste, all kinds of good stuff. Go online, check it out. Razors, batteries. Oh, man. And the deal on that, brothers and sisters, is that these are things that we produce, not that we bought from somebody else to sell them to you. We produce them. WeBuyBlack.com. And if you're in the Atlanta area, check them out. They have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall. They have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall so you can get your products direct. Go to the Greenbrier Mall and check out WeBuyBlack.com's kiosk. Africa for the Africans. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. My good brother, Bomani Tahimba, Oh, man, I love him. He helped me out getting my stuff together for my trip. I'm leaving next week Friday. That's right, brothers and sisters. I'm leaving next week Friday, going to Ghana, West Africa. And all you got to do, if you want to find out more about what's happening, go to AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Go to his website and check it out. If you want to see pictures from previous tours, go to Facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos from previous tours, go to YouTube.com/Bomani2007. And this way you can check it out for yourself. Also, too, he has a tour coming up in May 22nd to June 4th, $3,700, a great buy, okay? And then he also has two trips later in the year, November 22nd to December 2nd, going to South Africa, going to Johannesburg and Cape Town. And then if you want to check out the last tour that he has at the end of the year, December 24th to January 4th, 2020, and that's going to Ghana. Give him a call at 404-931-9429, 404-931-9429. And he'll help you get your visas and all the other good stuff that you may need. A lot of good information. One of the things, of course, that I'm interested in when I go to Ghana is check out Garvey Town. The plans have been laid. I want to get all that information so I can give that to you correct. So if you are like me and you are considering, and I know a lot of us are not, I understand that. Repatriating, that means going back to live, but I am. And so to me, that's very important, and I can't wait to check that out. And I'll give you those details. You never know. Shrine of the Black Madonna. Shrine of the Black Madonna. If you want books, clothes, furniture, artwork, red, black, and green shoes, they have it at the Shrine of the Black Madonna, 946 Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard in the West End here in Atlanta. The number to call is 404-549-8676. 404-549-8676. They even have a Holocaust museum within the shrine that you can exhibit. But if you want history, they have a history class every Saturday, free and open to the public from 1:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. The multimedia presentation is done. The class, Black History class, Know Thyself. Brother Olatunji does an outstanding job. But if you cannot do that, but you want the information, you can get the multimedia library from the shrine. That's right. Over 15,000 video files, over 15,000 images, over 40,000 audio files, over 2,000 books. That is right, brothers and sisters. You will have 4.5 terabytes of Africa enlightenment from great scholars and teachers of our people. So check that out as well. Other bookstores, we have the bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, which is the Meddu bookstore. Sister has a great assortment of books, but if you go in there and you don't have the book that she doesn't have the book that you want, she'll get it for you, believe me. Also, too, is right by the We Buy Black kiosk. So right by the We Buy Black kiosk is the Meddu bookstore. Another bookstore we promote is Brother, that's right, Kazimde Ajamu. Brother Kazimde Ajamu, he's the owner-operator of Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. The number to call is 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. There is light in the Black Dot. He also has the red, black, and green shoes. He has the white ones too, all the men. Them UNIAs are beautiful, beautiful shoes, you know, and very reasonable. So check them out. And if he doesn't have the books that you're looking for, believe me, he'll get them. Us Lifting Us. Us Lifting Us is an economic development cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa, which is cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. We pull our money together to provide goods and services for our people. And Cafe Ulu is one of the first things we helped develop. It's a coffee cafe in Atlanta, in the Sylvan Road area, 2036 Sylvan Road, 2036 Sylvan Road in Sylvan Plaza. And it's open Tuesday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and we sell coffee. That's right, brothers and sisters, we sell coffee. We specialize in African coffees, Cameroon, Tanzania, Kenya, and, of course, where coffee started in Ethiopia, but we also have coffees from other parts of the world. We even had a coffee from Papua New Guinea. Okay? We sell coffee. And then, of course, we have all kinds of stuff that we sell that is produced by us. The pastries, the wraps, all these things are produced by us. Even the potato chips, Symphony Potato Chips, a brother and his two daughters have it. But we also have a vitality drink, Ambrosia, Brother Novak Young, Ambrosia. So we have all of these things at Cafe Ulu. Check it out. Go online at Cafe Ulu. Check it out. Buy some coffee. Get that Cameroon Boyo, man. It's delicious. So go check out Cafe Ulu. Akabin Institute and Akabin House, they celebrated their 20th anniversary at the beginning of this month. And we will continue to promote Akabin Institute because they need your funds. They need support. If you have a sense and an understanding how important it is to educate our children in an environment and give them instructions of independent African education, then Akabin Institute is for you. Send them some money. Help them keep going. Help Baba Baruti and Yah Baruti keep going. Akabin Institute, you can write the check out to Akabin Institute, and you can mail it to P.O. Box 10786, 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. You can do PayPal and Cash App. The Cash Shine, Yah Baruti, YAAMBARUTI. And you can do that PayPal or Cash App. Okay? The Inye Sesem. We haven't read them in quite a while. We were, unfortunately, we were unable to broadcast this past Wednesday. Had technical difficulties, and we may have technical difficulties. Things happen. So I'm going to read the last few days. I'm going to read the 23rd, 24th, and, of course, today is the 25th. March 23rd. When deeds speak, words are meaningless. African proverb. That's right. Actions speak louder than words, brothers and sisters. Always. In our quest for real models of Revolutionary War scholars, we must first remember that our closest and most powerful sheroes and heroes rise during times of conflict with others. They are awakened to their power during our hardest of times. Conflict with enemies tests strengths and loyalties, struggle tempers. Our sheroes and heroes also held another quality in common. Even though the death is a sure sign of being at war, they refuse to entertain a fear of it. As a bona fide warriors, they were willing to die for the people. Martyrs do not want to die, but they recognize its historical inevitability when dealing with destroyers who know little else. Through their show of strength, they make it clear that as warrior scholars, we must know that we would rather die as Africans then vicariously and intimately live as Europeans. Like them, the future of our people must become more critical than our own physical survival. For us, this spiritual crisis challenges our deepest thinking about the mobilization of power and the creation of reality. Affirm, struggle tempers me. Affirm, struggle tempers me. March 24th. There is no substitute for competence in building self-esteem. Absolutely none. A problem arises when a teacher focuses on self-esteem and not learning. Barbara Sizemore, great educator, Barbara Sizemore. Self-esteem is a function of self-activation and practice versus constant, often gratuitous praise from others. Belief in one's talent and abilities, all mental evaluations must come from inner work, internal work. Therefore, a permanent behavior modification must introduce the development of an internalized incentive to succeed. These forces which motivate the individual and group should be internally grounded versus externally manipulated, given, taken versus given, and personally experienced versus vicariously fantasized. Has the fisherman who learns to fish through trial and tribulation is better prepared to feed his family than the one who is reduced to the status of an ignorant, skillless, dependent beggar who only knows the charity of others. so too is the patience better prepared for life when difficult skills are required through determined practice supported by occasional praise. Lasting resilience, self-esteem is required through struggle. The child who comes to feel good about self because every successful and or unsuccessful little thing or effort is applauded and or rewarded comes to depend on that praise and on those things for ego gratification. His esteem is dependent based. When these transitory supporters are given less easily and frequently as the child ages, the drive for independently working towards success fades with them. So you must be steadfast and strong. Affirm, I teach using obstacles. Affirm, I teach using obstacles. March 25th. We are dealing with people who are not penitent, exhibit no remorse for their wrongdoing, seek all possible means to preserve and persevere in their nefarious plots, and when found out, blame others for their misdeeds. William Strickland. Our traditional wisdom teaches us that a person becomes human only through a social and spiritual development. It is not an honor assumed at birth. Just because you come here in the same way that a male or female does not become a man or woman simply because they fathered or gave birth to a child. It is achieved state gained through learning and correctly practicing these qualities such as being selfless, kind, considerate, generous, attentive, humble, caring, respectful, merciful, xenophilic, and conservative of that which is good, creative, and healing that have universally been defined as human creating. One learns them through oral lessons and observations. This humanizing evolution in the individual can only occur within the context of an involved and spiritually, intellectually, and emotionally mature community. Of course, since even when these qualities are stated as admirable, they are only practiced for show, to deceive, but not from the heart in Western society. This begs the question of whether Europeans ever became human. Affirm, I am human. Affirm, I am human. That last one was deep. Because those qualities are just not in the European. He just can't do it. It is not within him to do it. He's selfish and greedy and don't want to share. Dirty son of a gun. Yeah. I hope everything is well with you. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to enjoy some of the nice weather that some parts of the country had. It hasn't been as bad around the country as it's been before. Have an open mic. If you want to ask a question, you have a question, comment, or concern, please give us a call. I'm going to talk a little bit about a couple of things we talked about last week. One is the NC2A, which I detest. And the other one is reparations. So we'll kind of go over that. But if there's something you want to talk about, give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Yep, the tournament kicked off. Actually, the tournament really started Tuesday in Dayton, Ohio. Tuesday and Wednesday in Dayton, Ohio. If you watch the NC2A tournament, because they made so much money, and many of the schools that participate are private schools. I mentioned last week the amount of money coaches make at these private institutions, millions of dollars, with the highest so far at the private institution. At the public institution, because they don't tell you what the private institutions make. Was John Calipari of Kentucky making close to $8 million a year. Now, of course, coaches have multi-revenue streams. Not only do they have that huge salary, on average, anywhere between 1 point something to where Calipari is at almost $8 million. I venture to say, as I looked at that, anywhere $2 to $3 million a year, most of the coaches. And so they have other revenue streams, as I stated. They have TV, they have radio, they have a TV show, a radio show. They have local endorsements, national endorsements. You know, the apparel company, whether it's Reebok, Nike, or whoever it is, they have to wear that apparel, just like Zion Williamson, who blew out his shoe, a Nike shoe the other day. He still has to wear a Nike shoe at Duke because the coach, Mike Krzyzewski, gets big money from Reebok. Gets big money from Nike for his players to wear the jerseys that you can see the swish on them and to wear the shoes. He gets paid. They all get paid. The kids don't get paid. The kids don't make and that's why some of the schools have been able to develop beautiful facilities. That's why the NC2A, the tournament itself, has its own floor. They used to, you know, where they would contract the tournament and they would use the arena floor for them, and they would put down a big round NC2A on it, maybe at the center court and maybe at the free throw line extended area. So, you know, it's the NC2A, you know. But now they have their own floor around the country. They just take them up, change the wording, put them in another location, and it has it laid out. The way they have it now, and then, of course, Tuesday and Wednesday last week, they had that floor said, when you look at the game on television, on the left up, it will be what round it is. The floor said first four in, the first four or first in. Then there was Thursday and Friday, it was the first round. Saturday and Sunday, it was the second round. When you see the floor Thursday and Friday this week, Thursday and Friday, it'll say Sweet 16. When you see the floor Saturday and Sunday, it'll say Elite 8. When you see the floor next week, not this coming Saturday, but the following Saturday and Sunday, I won't see it. I'll be out of town. I'll be out of the country. I won't see, but I'll know who won. It'll say Final Four. It'll say Final Four. So, like I said, they have their own floor. The first Tuesday and Thursday last week, it was first four. Then it was first round, second round, Sweet 16, Elite 8, Final Four. The floors are decked out. Everything looks great. They have all this money. They have millions. The sponsorship is just off the chain. Everybody even having their own ladder. Sponsored by, I can't remember, Warner Ladder. They even have their own ladders when they cut down the nest. That's sponsored. Oh, and you know, I'm going to tell you, because you correct me if I'm wrong. I would venture to say 90% of the players in this whole tournament, all the players, I venture to say 90% were American African or African players. 90% of the people who are on the floor. Now, you may have a team and then you see the cats on the bench, mostly Caucasian. Some of them don't even have scholarships because they have wealth. They want to play ball because the scholarships are usually for those brothers. So they can be at the school, not doing any schoolwork, mind you, but be at the school preparing them to play basketball or preparing them to play football, especially in the big conferences. Now, understand, the NC2A tournament takes large schools, small schools. You know, they have, the SWAC conference, MEAC conference. These are historically the ACBUs. They get a chance to play in the conference, and they get a chance to get their butt whooped and get some money. Usually they get dusted. Usually a 16 seed. You know, they seed them in their four areas. four areas, four groupings of 16 apiece, which is 64. And it's 16 plays one, 15 plays two, and so forth and so forth. And that's how they do it. Sometimes there's some upsets. There's been one. I think there's a, who's that 13 that's in? I can't remember, but one higher seed is in. But pretty much all the low seeds, you know, they're pretty much in. All number ones are in. Last year, for the first time in the tournament, and the first time in the NC2A tournament, a number 16 beat a number one. It's happened in the women's tournament many years ago. I'll never forget. I was watching the game. It was Harvard against Stanford. Two intellectually big schools, as they saying goes, Harvard and Stanford. I was like, man. But they had this sister on Harvard, Allison Feaster. Man, that sister had the game of her life. And, of course, a number 16 beat a number one. You know, a number 16 beat a number one. So, yep, Allison Feaster. And then, of course, last year, Virginia, University of Virginia. It looks like it was going to happen again. They were losing at halftime. They were losing at halftime. And it's like, man, this is going to happen again to these cats. But they came out in the second half and opened up on, I can't remember the team, and they went ahead and dusted them. So all four number one seeds are still there. It could have happened to Duke. I was pulling for beat Duke, you know. In fact, Johnny Dawkins coached that team, University of Central Florida. University of Central Florida, UCF. And Johnny Dawkins was the first player in Mike Krzyzewski's coaching career to be a star. He was one of the first players, Johnny Dawkins, and he was coaching that team, and his son was playing for him. His son was killing, man. His son had, he had 30-some points, but he couldn't make that. He makes that tip in, they win. Duke is going home. God, that would have been a great story. Would have been a fantastic story. But don't worry about it. I don't think Duke is going to go all the way. And if they do, so what? You know, I think that if the players, those young men, had leadership outside of the university, say to the university, we tired of this. You take players from neighborhoods that are impoverished. You take them and you take them into your school. You really don't educate them. You want them to play football and basketball. And then once you get all this damn money, you give nothing back to that community. Nothing. And then once their playing time is over, they go back to that community. Now, some argue that some of the players, the alumni embrace some of those players, and some of those players get a chance and opportunity through the alumni and other connections to get jobs and so forth and so on. I'm not going to dispute that. And that's cool. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the usury kind of system that is the NC2A. And like I said, every time I see Mark Emery, you know, who is the chairperson or whatever the hell he is, or institute, I want to punch him in the face. Because they insist upon using that. No, they're student athletes. A Caucasian coined that way back in the 50s because they looked at that situation and said, this could be problematic. So we're constantly calling them student athletes. So you can, yeah, no, they're students. Oh, really? I remember the graduation rates were so bad about 10, 15 years ago. It was a national issue. Now, they didn't take up the issue that these kids were getting exploited by these schools, using their talents to make money for everybody but them. What they were dealing with was how bad the grades are and how seriously it is that these kids don't graduate. At some schools, they had zero graduates. Now, I understand that because of that, many schools now, they are more adamant in trying to make sure that the young men in football and basketball of those major colleges graduate, but they're still being manipulated, still being undermined, still being used. They get nothing. While the coaches, the assistant coaches, the athletic director, the school, and then they said, well, you know, we really need these kids to make that sacrifice for all the other sports so the other sports that we have can be funded. Because they don't get the attention. Nobody's coming to pay dropping big dollars, going to big arenas to see them play all the other sports that the NCAA has. And of course the NCAA, you know, they got a commercial about this one brother and you see him. It looks like a Spike Lee production because you see his face and then all you see happening, things are just constantly changing and happening around him. And what the commercial says, if you do well in the classroom and you do well on the athletic field, wherever it is, basketball court, baseball diamonds, football field, whatever, hockey, water polo, whatever, gymnastics, track. If you do well in all of those, we can find a place for you in the NCAA. We'll find, if you are a academic, you don't have to be a scholar. Believe me, if you play athletics and you maintain maybe a B, no less than a C, which is a 2.5, but if you get a 3 point or better constantly, you will get a scholarship. It is easy as that. When I coached football for all those many years, that's what I used to tell my kids. I used to tell these young men, I said, hey, if you go to school and you get decent grades and you got a good attitude and you got attendance, you know, that you're constantly, and you play a sport and you do well, you don't have to be great. You don't have to be great, none of that. You just have to do well. You can get a scholarship. It's easy as that. It's easy as that. But the system in itself, just like Bill Maher said, March Madness is a stirring reminder of what America was founded on, making tons of money off the unpaid labor of our people. The NCAA has made billions of dollars. Just like when I was watching that one piece, he said that you're looking at Alabama, and they're talking about all these things they have at Alabama. Excuse me. I'm still getting over some congestion and all this other stuff that I had. Excuse me, y'all. And anyway, he said, Alabama, stop flaunting all your wealth. You know, Alabama's one of the poorest states, along with Kentucky. There are many poor states in terms of, you know, what they pay out and so forth. But you see the University of Alabama, they look great. All the others, they look great. So I'm going to take a call. 404. Good morning.
Hey, brother Oates, how you doing? You hear me?
I can hear you well. Go ahead, Wes.
Yes, sir, man. I'm going to stick to topic first, I want to talk about something else on a theory.
Sure.
Yeah, man. That sports and entertainment, man, ain't nothing but a sidestepping, and they cripping black people, man. And I played college football, and I just walked away from the game, man. Back in the 70s, man. I saw the game, how they were cripping us.
Mm-hmm.
And then the NCAA, man, that's major pimpology, man.
And that's for sure.
Okay, they use it like Barkley and Sam Jackson and Spike Lee like the damn Three Stooges, man.
Yeah, and them cats out there cooning, getting paid.
Yeah, cooning, man.
They got their cooning, getting paid.
All of them got big money, man.
Yeah.
And look at this damn fool Shaq, man. He's a damn big, skinny, grinny clown, man.
Well, you know, there was a, I don't know if you remember, about 10, 15 years ago, a book came out called The Directory of Certified Uncle Toms.
the directory of really certified Uncle Toms, and Shaq was in it then, and he's showing the hell would be in it now. Because to me,
Uncle Tom was a hero, man, but Sambo and Jumbo. But even Dr. Francis was talking about they got us playing with balls at the same time they cut our balls off.
Yeah, Dr. Francis Crest, she was on it. Yeah, she was.
And the main thing I want to talk about, man, this is so-called investigation of the Atlanta child murders, man.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
See, what's going to happen is we need an independent investigator, because if they bring that damn GBI in, it's going to be, you know what GBI means, right?
Well, Georgia Investigation. Yeah.
Yeah, Georgia Bureau of Investigation. Uh-huh. But really, it's a good old bad institute, man. Okay? So, the middle of Atlanta, you even lawyers said, you, for Wayne Williams, said, use an independent investigation, man.
Well, let me say this. I would agree. And to me, everything should be done independently. Even Mueller, all the people around Trump, all of this chaos, all this bullshit, but yet Mueller's report said he found that through his report, there was no collusion. There was no, you know, even though he said in the report, this does not exonerate Trump, but it definitely doesn't condemn him, and nor does it prove, I guess, that there was a cooperation or a collusion with the Russians. And I think we all know that. They colluded to undermine the election. But I don't care, you know. But they do what they want to do. It's just like about 3 years ago, this brother, the mayor, you know, Kasim Reed said he committed suicide in Piedmont Park. Now, there was no way that this young man could have committed suicide by hanging himself.
Yes, sir.
By hanging himself in Piedmont Park. The reality was, the reality is that there was a Klan rally at Stone Mountain that same weekend that this young man is found hanging from a tree. There is nowhere on the trunk of the tree where you could see him climbing up a tree, putting a rope around a branch, and then putting it on his neck and tying it tight and then, you know, releasing it, thereby hanging himself. It didn't happen. It didn't happen.
And then, like last year, they found somebody at the Walmart around here somewhere in the Walmart parking lot hanging on a tree. Remember that?
I don't remember that one. I don't remember that one.
Somebody around the AI Center about last year.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just want
to. What it is, man, we got to learn our self-defense and quit damn walking and going somewhere by ourselves, man. If you can't protect yourself, man.
That's definitely true about our women. We always should make sure our sisters are protected, because I mean, I don't know, when you look at Facebook, and obviously everything that's presented on Facebook is not true. We all know that. And you take it comes to you. But if you research further, you'll see that some of the stuff on Facebook is true. Some, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think one thing is being very clear, that a lot of our people are missing, coming up missing.
Yeah.
The reality of organ harvesting is real.
Yes, sir.
The action of organ harvesting is real. It has been happening.
Yes, sir.
You know, so we got to be aware of who, you know, where we are and who we hang with. I mean, the reality is this, is that we have been warred upon. But yet, because our training, our indoctrination, our so-called education teaches us not to believe that. That training makes us want to march, sit in, boycott, beg, crackers, for inclusion into this ugly ass system. So we don't think independently like that.
Look at this right here, man. Every time I listen to a radio show all around the country, you hear the Negroes talking about they served in the military and went to West Point. I mean, damn, we should have our own secret military force like Israel and Mossad.
Well, okay? Let me say this about
they
the
take eye, we take eye, take their eye, man. Okay, you seen the movie Drop Squad? We need to have a real
Drop Squad. I agree with the Drop Squad, brother.
To be dead.
Yeah, I hear you. I agree with that one. We should have a Drop Squad for these coons and boot licking and butt kissing and all this scratching where we don't itch
and
laughing.
A hit squad for
shit
these
funny.
Cypress that's killing us, man. Yeah, we need a hit squad.
No,
but like just Israeli Mossad. And the Russians, can't you be,
see,
man?
But see, the
I'm
problem with that is
one man hit squad.
I hear you, brother. Go ahead.
I'm coming at them. Hey, one more thing, man. This thing when I'm telling you about my money, if the state of Georgia done put up a tax where if you get you the beneficiary of money coming from out of state, Georgia put a tax on your money coming in, man. It wasn't my man.
Well, it's a percentage.
So I had to pay extra money.
Right, it's a percentage. What they do is it's a luxury tax. So, say, for instance, you only got a few $1,000s. They may not tax that. But if you come in with $15,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, they're going to tax that.
Yes, sir.
You know, that's what they're going to do.
Because they say you're bringing money.
Right.
You're getting money from out of state. So, they want this state want to put their hand in somebody's pocket. Man.
I know. And the sad thing about that, when you got that money, a lot of times it was taxed. And it'll be taxed again and so forth. So, it's a system, man, that is not for those who are just making it. That's the kind of system it is. So, okay, Wes.
So basically, I had to pay double tax, federal tax, and state. Man.
Yeah. So, all right, my brother.
I just about got the bill. I don't know. I'm $200 short from the promised land. So when it do kick in, I'm going to give you the information. And so you can do your thing, too, man. That's what it's about, sharing information.
Right on. Appreciate it. Thanks, Wes. Have a good day, brother.
Yes, sir, man. All right. Stay strong. Stay black.
All right. Stay on the line if you want to. Okay, brother. Peace.
Yes, sir. I'm still on the line.
804. Good morning. 804.
Is that me?
That's you. Good morning. How are you this morning?
Oh, shalom, brother. I didn't know I was packed in like that one.
Oh,
it's
okay.
It's good to hear your voice.
All right.
And I received a message about what's happening with the brother in Ghana. I just came on, and of course, the reality is that they are taking our organs. They've been doing it.
Oh, yeah.
They've been doing it. They've been doing it in the hospitals for years. This thing about it, people taking off the street, you know, like with the movie Get Out, that's been going on, but they've been taking our organs and messing with us.
Oh, yeah.
Since we got here off of this ship. I mean, that's the reality.
I mean,
they continually mention us all the time all kinds of ways, not just physically, but emotionally and mentally, because I was in the school system for a very long time. Now I'm in Richmond, Virginia, and it is criminal the way they do not teach the children. They've gotten so bad here, a lot of these schools don't even want the children to learn the multiplication table.
Mm.
They don't want them to write in cursive. They just want them to be SOL robots.
Yeah.
I was a subbing last year at Huguenot High School, and I have a class, Ms. Adams' class, I had several times, a very good class, math class. And, you know, I really thought the kids was up on things, and I just asked them a question. It was actually the last week of school. And I said, if I took you to Walmart and I gave you $100, and then it was the total was $58.24. What would the change be?
Bro.
The kids looked at me, and I looked at them.
Exactly.
And I said, "Do not pull out a calculator. Do not get a piece of paper and a pencil. Do it in your head." Do you know that one child that out of 12 that was interested, it actually took him 15 minutes to come up with the answer. 15 minutes.
But the other ones didn't even come up with the answer.
Yeah, but the sad part about it is that our children in the 10th and 11th grade can't do common, simple math in their head without the use of a calculator. That's outrageous.
Hey.
That means that a lot of people dropped the ball the whole time they were in school.
And that's why they don't have cash registers. They have scanners.
Right.
Because in a cash register, it would be the same thing. If what I bought from you is $5.35, and I give you $6, then you got to know what that change is. And of course, now the scanners does that. They'll tell you what how much it is, and they'll tell you what the change is going to be. But back in the day, you had to figure that out.
Sure
and,
did.
In fact, what's even deeper, a lot of clocks that have the numbers on them, a face, a clock face, the numbers 12, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, then back to 12, they are eliminating them to go with the digital numbers because they can't read the time.
Wow.
They can't read the time. They don't know. They don't know quarter after the hour. 2015. I mean, I know Navy time because when I was with the fire department, we had to use that time to distinguish with the, to distinguish AM and PM, AM and PM. Right. See, because somebody might say five o'clock, and then in the afternoon, which is not 5 o'clock, it's 17. Right. It's 17. Right. You know. So anyway, but yeah. That's what's happening, too. So it's a dumbing down, no doubt.
And the thing about it, my brother, you know, I have a daughter. She's 26 years old. Besides the fact that I'm a teacher and been a teacher a long time, any parent should take the time to go over the basic things with their children way before they go to school. Way before they go to pre-K.
I agree.
It doesn't take much. Children are a sponge. It does not
yes,
take
it does.
Much. To get the number book, it doesn't take much to count with your children 1 through 10. It doesn't take much to identify objects around the house, objects in the street, and it certainly doesn't take much to teach them the ABCs. These are simple things,
but
because that's the foundation. So then, when they go out of your house and they start to learn things, they'll have something to work with. And also, more important than that, is putting your children on a schedule.
Mm-hmm.
On a schedule. You do not let your children run through the house all day and all night. That's crazy. That's chaos.
I agree.
And I have been in so many young people's houses and older people as well, because I was a late mother. I didn't have my daughter till I was 39.
Okay.
So I observed the way people were raising their children back in the day and now. And we were taught coming up as kids, there was a time we watched television when we came home from school, you turned it off, you took your bath, you got ready for bed, you said your prayers, your mom gave you a kiss and you went to bed, you got up at 6 o'clock, and then you got ready for school. And before you went to bed, you got your book bag together.
Right.
Because you knew you were going to school. And parents were very diligent about that. I don't know. Well, actually, I do know what happened. I actually do know. But nevertheless, we have to return to that.
Yeah.
We have to return to preparing our children.
Well, that
necessitates. To be loved.
Right.
But
that would necessitate both parents working together to help rear those children. Unfortunately, the man was taken from out of the home, and that they did that as a necessity because they understood that the biggest challenges to European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege is a strong, solid American African family, the black family. And so
Absolutely.
They did that with the intent to disrupt our family life. And of course, that some sisters were so overwhelmed. And that the children were raising themselves, and that some of the young men being raised by women were coddled, weren't instructed, no discipline infused in them, and they did that what the hell they wanted to do, even to the point of scaring the hell out of their parents and grandparents. You know, but hey, listen, I'm coming up on a break. You stay with us, okay, my sister? If you want to,
okay.
Do you listen?
All right,
I'm coming up on a break. We've got some other callers. Just hang on. We'll be right back. We're coming up on a break. And, of course, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us. On the flip side, we're going to talk about reparations. I didn't get a chance to read Brother Conrad Worrell's piece in the Chicago Crusader on reparations and Pan-Africanism. It's a very important piece. So we'll be right back. Stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media. part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Other programs here on Time for an Awakening Media. On Mondays, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8. After Acres of Diamonds is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then on Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy, 7 p.m. to 8. And then on Fridays, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening. That's right, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And then on Saturday, Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then on Sunday, Revive with Sister POC from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Sunday evening, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 7 p.m. And of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Now I have a caller hanging, so I'm going to get this call before I go to another topic. And that caller, yeah. 646-646. Good afternoon.
Hey, what's going on, Ochi? I see you on your NCAA rap again, huh?
Yeah, yes, I am. You know, if I get a chance to be on it again one more time before I go, because I won't be able to see it. By the time I get back, it'll be, you know, latter part of April, so... But I'm going to always be on that, Jay. Always be on that. I've been on that, man, for decades. I've had a total disdain for the National Collegiate Athletic Association. They've had a bug up my butt. Even when Miles Brand was the chairperson, he was a weak dude. But then Emmert came in, and Emmert just made me hate it much, much more because of his arrogance and his attitude about and his insistence. That's the same thing that happened to me with Clemson and their football program and their coach, Dabo Sweeney. I hate that dude. He was talking about, well, you know, if they started to pay players, that's when you lose me. I'll do something else. His ass, at that time he said that, this was like 4 years ago. He now makes about $7 million a year from Clemson University. Clemson is a public school. He makes more money in the state of South Carolina than anybody.
So, well, I mean, he's bringing them, as they say, right. Clemson pride or whatever you want to refer to it. Didn't they win the championship this year?
Yes, they did.
Oh, so he's even probably bigger.
Yes.
He may have even gotten a pay raise, you know?
And you're right again. Because when he said that, he was only making $3 million. He won the national championship. He was like five or six. And now he's making almost seven something. Yeah.
Well, you know, Florida State, they won a big game, two big games this weekend. And the one good thing that I like about Leonard Hamilton is, man, 95% of his boys graduate college.
That's a great thing.
That's the most important. The most important thing to me, man.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like I always have said, man, student athletes are just a place to make the necessary contacts to have a successful and productive life, if that's what you really, really want. It's just like, you know, this weekend I was having some discussions with some young people. And I was trying to tell them, man, you know, you got to start looking at your future not only here in America, but around the world.
Yeah.
You gotta start, you know,
yeah,
learning the basics to the most popular languages in the world so that you could have the opportunity, if you have certain skill sets, to go any place and survive. You want to be able to understand a little bit of the language. You want to be able to understand the universal greetings and just be able to know the basics on how to order the food that you like to eat. Mm-hmm. Things of that nature. And if you do that, you could go anywhere and over a period of time adapt.
Yeah, I agree.
Like I was telling my nephew who wants to be a basketball player, you know, 9, 10 years old, 11 years old. And I was saying to him, well, you know, the chances of you making it to the NBA may not be what the deal is. But if you really, really want to spend a nice portion of your life playing basketball and you have the skills to, start learning some different languages so that maybe you could go overseas if you can't make it to the NBA, make you good money, and be able to be embraced by the culture because you are able to give the culture something by understanding and being able to communicate with the people.
Look
what
you...
And that would just make you more of a solid citizen.
Jay, and a celebrity. Look what Stephon Marbury was able to
do.
Yeah.
And he don't speak an inch, probably. He may now understand some of the words and may be able to speak a little bit. But just imagine if he had a nice understanding of Mandarin when he first went over there, what his popularity would be.
Well,
but these are the things that you have to guide your kids to. You have to let them know that this America is a foreign empire, man. I mean, you know, I don't know if you spoke about this nonsense with the Mueller report or not.
A little bit, man.
That just goes to show you how tainted this is. But the thing that's got me laughing the most about this whole Mueller thing is how people are just so disappointed and so upset and so heartbroken over this.
Yeah.
But what they really don't understand is that Mueller really did them a favor because he's now placed them in a position to where they're going to get Trump. Don't think they're not going to get him. I can tell you now how they're going to get him three ways, basically. They're going to get him through his kids in New York State. They're going to get him for bank fraud, and they're going to get him for tax fraud.
Yeah.
Now, the only thing is that they may not be able to get him now, but they're going to come after his kids,
No, so they'll get him.
Now, 6 or 7 months from now, you'll see when it starts to drop.
I think that they'll let him go through his term, and because if the Mueller report was, to me, seriously objective, open, and looked at all of the evidence, he would have. Yes, there is collusion. How can you have all these people around him? All these people, Flynn, his sons, all these people dealing with it. I mean, it's a fact that the Russians manipulated the election. They know this.
Which I don't care about. I don't care nothing about
I don't
that.
Care either. I can give less than a rat's ass about it. Yeah.
I could care less.
Me too.
Nobody want to talk about what America's doing over in Venezuela, but you want me to be upset because what Russia did to you? You got to be nuts.
Yeah.
But nobody talks about that. But the thing is, what's going to happen is if the so-called Democrats had anything about themselves and were any value and were about their business, what they would basically do is put together a program, appeal to the American people, get the American people to want to vote for them. You know what I'm saying? Because I could tell you now, I would say around January of next year, they're going to go after him. Because that's the only way they're going to be able to keep him from being elected, is to go after him. And by going after him, they're going to go after his kids. Because they can't get him now until he's out of office. So what they'll do is they'll just put the pressure on his kids for tax evasion, bank fraud, or something like that. And then when he's out of office, they'll bang him for tax fraud and for what you call it. But the whole thing boils down to what is going to be the messaging of the Democratic Party and able to fight back when he starts talking about there was no collusion. Well, you're going to have to say things like, in regards to, well, show your taxes.
Well, to me, I think
that's the only way you'll be able to fight him back.
Right.
And to me,
no person should run for political office. All the offices are public. There should be transparency with a candidate, any and every candidate. And that candidate should show their taxes. They should show their taxes. And so now, hold on, Jay. And so now a bill is being put forth that in order for a person to run for president, he or she must show their tax returns, unlike Trump, who didn't and hasn't and probably won't. Because I'm quite sure within those tax returns, you might find some more incriminating evidence.
Yeah, but the thing with that, Oshie, that's going to have to be done, honestly, on the state level. That can't be done through Congress and Senate, because they'll never pass it. The Congress may pass it, but the Senate never will, and he'll veto it. But what they can do, they did in Washington, was pass a bill saying if you don't show your taxes, you can't be on the ballot.
Right.
That's the only way
And that's what's going to happen nationwide, I believe.
Hey, listen, if that happens nationwide, that would be a good thing. But listen to this. I don't think the powers that be have it within them to do those types of things. Because you got to remember, man, all of these legislators are benefiting from the things that he's doing. It's everyday people like me and you who are getting caught up in the mix.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So the thing is, you got to deal with the narrative. It has to be grassroots organizations coming forward and putting together the narrative. Look at it this way. The best thing that the American people could do is put together a collective in charge to change the narrative on what is being said. If it doesn't happen from the grassroots and you waiting for these TV pundits, these radio hosts, and all of this to do it, it's just not going to happen. And I mean, the black people that's on TV, they are so weak. And then
that's why they on TV. Jay, do you think I could be on TV? Huh?
Hell no.
Hell, I'm acting like
a moderate, you couldn't.
No.
Even if you did, your name alone would keep you off of TV.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You have to go back to your slave days or something like that. See, the bottom line is the people are going to have to figure out how to stop letting these so-called political pundits sway us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because we got to do what, you know, they were talking about last night on the show. We got to push independent media. We got to make it to where as information is being disseminated. Because the bottom line is, most of these black people that's in this whole political thing is trying to bring you into whiteness.
Of course, talking about no sovereignty or anything.
I had to get on this sister the other day, man. I had to blast, and I try not to really blast sisters. This sister was talking about independent education. And I was trying to say to her, that if you really want independent black education, the blueprint has been set forward. And she said to me, well, what is the blueprint? I said, the new book by Baba Marado Baruti, To Educate a People. I said, this book is close to 700 pages or more. You read this book, he's totally outlining what we as African people have to do in regards to educating our people. She going to give me some nonsense about, well, I don't know who he is. Oh, man. Oh, man. It was on and popping. I'm saying to you, you talking about you conscious, you talking about you Afrocentric, you all this and that, and you don't know who Baba Baruti is? Okay, let me tell you some of the books, you know, that you right. need to read. Let me tell you where you can go and see all of the books that he wrote. Well, you can't be talking no real African consciousness and you ain't read none of Baba Baruti stuff. I told it right now, he's the foremost, as far as I'm concerned, Afrocentric thought leader out there putting out information. As far as I'm concerned, he doing and continuing the work of Dr. Ben Clark, Chancellor Wu, and all of those.
Yeah.
You really want to be about being African, you got to read Dr. Baruti's stuff. If you're not reading his stuff, to me, you're just a pretender. I'm letting you know that.
Well, you
and
know,
like
hey,
I'm
well,
going
Jay,
blind,
Jay,
so I try a hard time.
Well, Jay, you're not getting any disagreement out of me, brother. That's for sure. You know that. Not getting any disagreement out of me.
All
right.
And put me on mute.
Okay.
And listen, leave the NAACP alone because they just doing their job.
Yeah.
Hotel, brother.
Peace. Jay. Right on. Yeah. This past week, I began to talk about reparations. Conrad Worrell, a very good friend of mine out of Chicago, one of the old school, real old school, you know, brothers from back in the day in the 60s and so forth. But he has been in this struggle. He is an esteemed elder. I repeat, he is an esteemed elder. He has been in the fight. He continues to be in the fight. He'll be in this fight till they take him out. That's the kind of brother Conrad Worrell is. He's now writing a column for the Chicago Crusader, ChicagoCrusader.com. You can get his articles. They come out once a week. And this one deals with reparations and Pan-Africanism, dated the 21st. Our great historian and departed ancestor, Dr. John Henry Clark, who I love, respect, and admire, described in his classic book, Notes for an African World Revolution, that the idea of uniting all African, the idea of uniting all Africa had its greatest development early in the 20th century. In this context, reparations for African people will never die. Dr. Clark wrote that in 1900, the Trinidadian lawyer Sylvester Williams called together the first Pan-African conference in London. This meeting attracted attention and put the word Pan-African in the dictionaries for the first time. According to Dr. Clark, there were only 30 delegates to the conference who came mainly from England, the Caribbean, and the United States. Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois led the small delegation from the U.S. When we use the term Pan-Africanism, we must be very clear. Pan-Africanism is the belief that people of African ancestry throughout the world have the same racial and cultural characteristics and the same social and economic conditions as a result of our African origin. The Pan-African component of the reparations movement launched its first international conference on reparations in Lagos, Nigeria, in December of 1990. After that conference, the Organization of African Unity, the OAU, set up a group of eminent persons in June of 1992. Its aim was to work out the different ways in which to proceed and secure technical advisors who would help solve some of the difficulties associated with the claim for reparations. A second conference on reparations was held in Abuja, Nigeria, in 1993, attended by representatives throughout the diaspora. That conference issued a declaration, the Abuja Proclamation, which called for a national reparations committee to be established throughout Africa and the diaspora. The African Reparations Movement was formed in 1993 as a result of this proclamation. It is important that we understand that the idea of reparations has caught on with the masses of African people worldwide, in spite of the opposition of forces of Caucasian, European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, better known as white supremacy. A delegation from the United States led by the late Dr. Jacob Carruthers and the late Dr. Ron Walters participated in Abuja's first Pan-African conference and reported back to the leaders of the reparations movement in this country, USA, their observations and analysis of the conference. We think about Pan-Africanism and continue our struggle. Let us reflect on the contributions of our ancestor, Malcolm X, El-Haj Malik El-Shabazz, Brother Omar Wale. We must remember his role in helping to stimulate the Pan-African movement that we stand on today as we fight for reparations for African people throughout the world. In Malcolm's last visit to Africa before his untimely departure from us, he visited the president of Ghana, Osagyefo, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah. Malcolm gave this account of the meeting in his autobiography. Malcolm said, We discussed the unity of Africans and people of African descent. We agreed that Pan-Africanism was the key, also the problems of those African people's heritage. My time with him was up all too soon. I promised faithfully that I would return to the United States. I would relay to American Africans his personal warm regards. There is no doubt that the spirit of Malcolm and other great Pan-African leaders are helping to keep the idea of reparations for African people alive. The Abuja Proclamation should be the basis of our continued organizing of the reparations movement throughout the world. These ideas are still relevant to our organizing work in the reparations movement today. The following are some of the key points presented in the Abuja Proclamation, April 27 to 29, 1993. Recalling the organizations of African Unity's establishment of a mechanism for a group of eminent persons for appraising the reparations in relationship to the damage done to Africa and its diaspora by enslavement, colonization, and neocolonialism. The proclamation stated members were convinced that the issue of reparations is an important question regarding the united action of Africa and its diaspora and worth the active support of the rest of the international community. Fully persuaded that the damage sustained by African people is not a thing of the past, but is painfully manifested in the damaged lives of contemporary Africans from Harlem to Harare, who are damaged economics, and who in the damaged economics of the African world from Guinea to Guyana, from Somalia to Suriname. Cogent of the fact that the compensation for injustice need not necessarily be paid in capital transfer, but could include services to the victims of former forms of restitution and readjustment of the relationship to both parties. Convinced that the claim for reparations is well grounded in international law. Of course, the United Nations stated that 2 years ago. And of course, the United Nations, when they went to Durban, South Africa in 2001, right before 9/11 hit, that in Durban, South Africa, of course, the United States walked out of the conference, but it was stated unequivocally and very clear that the Atlantic enslavement of African people was a crime against humanity for which there are no statute of limitations. We must always remember what Dr. Clark taught us, that the powerful people never teach powerless people to take their power away from them. Reparations for African people will never die. Dr. Conrad Worrell, President Emeritus, or Chairman Emeritus of the National Black United Front, and Professor Emeritus of the Carruthers Center for Inner City Studies, my good brother, Brother Conrad. And basically what he was saying, that comes out of that ADOS, the descendants, or American descendants of slavery. I hate it. It comes out of that. And he was explaining to us about the ADOS movement, how divisive it is. what should happen, and I'm hoping that it happens before, I know in COBRA, the National Coalition for Black Reparations in America, is having its convention in June in Detroit, and ADOS is having a conference in October. I would hope that both of them and other organizations, the December 12th Movement, National Black United Front, anybody interested in the issue of reparations for our people, sit down and collectively deal with this problem. See, because the people here who are running this, yes, you say they're America and they're Americans. The people here are British, French, Spanish, Portuguese, whatever, whatever, because it's the same damn people. And they're the same, they do the same thing on the continent. So I'm saying to us, hey, you know, we don't go after them individually. No, we come collectively as African people because of what they have done to the continent. Because what they have done in the diaspora, we go after the Caucasian collectively because what he has done and continuing to do. So don't make no mistake about this issue of reparations. It's not just we're trying to get us some money here in America when nothing changes. They came, Professor Doherty worked out some economic piece about what they could get here in America. And I'm saying like, you know, that's not the issue. The issue should be, you know, what we get or what we get to prepare and repair ourselves. That's what it's supposed to be about. You know, the repair. This ain't about, you know, getting a paycheck. It ain't about that. It's not about that, brothers and sisters. It ain't about getting no damn money. It's about repairing a people, having a people who are now players in the world instead of the pawns that they have become. You know? So, where is that at? You see that piece that Professor Doherty wrote out about. Professor Sandy Doherty, a leading economist and premier scholar in the area of American reparations, and Diana Frank have illustrated using the work of Vedder, Galloway, and Klingman, the gains in wealth to Caucasian Southerners from ownerships of Africans in 1859 was $3.2 million. In today's dollar, the value of that debt is estimated to be somewhere between $5 to $10 trillion. Depending upon the interest rate used for compounding purposes. Now, he also has a formula here that says if we use this particular formula, you know, supposedly then, and here it is right here, we use this particular formula that every American, African-Americans, I like to call them, whose lineage can be traced to enslavement, would receive $400,000. $400,000. You know? And I'm saying, really? You know? I just don't see it. And of course, we're not going to see it. Because to me, you only get reparations when you are strong, when you are together, when you fight collectively. Just trying to put the reparations issue, you know, out there, no, that's not going to do it. That's not going to do it. And say that only those American Africans who can trace their lineage back to the enslavement of our people are eligible to get this particular money. Recent immigrants, recent refugees, even though they're black, even though they're African, they will not be able to apply. You know, one of the things they said, well, if I was going to Nigeria, well, let me say it to you this way. We are fighting collectively for the total African people, for the restitution and the repair for the damage that has been done to us. We're fighting on the continent, and we're fighting throughout the diaspora. That's what needs to happen. Because if we don't do that, then we will be manipulated, undermined, you know. So I couldn't find that other piece that he had where they were calculating, saying that if we use this particular formula, that, you know, each person would receive about $400,000. And you know, that's a serious sum of money. But let's just say it's not that deep. Let's just say the United States is saying we'll give the descendants of American Africans some money for the enslavement of their ancestors. We're going to give them $40,000 a family and $20,000 an individual. And then after that's done, just like I said before, there was a Caucasian named Charles Cuthheimer, who wrote an article on we should give them reparations. And his premise was that they are so untogether, they'll be happy as hell to get this money. It'll be like a big stimulus package. They'll stimulate the economy. They'll be buying Cadillacs and buying clothes and buying this. They won't pull the money together to create institutions for education. They won't pull their monies together to create institutions where they can have a hospital in their neighborhood, where they can have a supermarket like they should have, a chain of supermarkets to compete with others. They won't do that because we have trained them to be consumers. We've trained them to be consumers. And what they want to do is spend their money. That's what they want to do. They want to spend their money. So to me, I say the reparations movement must be about the repair of our people, the building of institutions to re-educate our people. That's what this whole reparations thing should be about. And if it ain't about that, it ain't about nothing, because we have been severely damaged. And just getting that little bit of money won't change anything. Jay, go ahead. 646. Go ahead, Jay.
Hey, Oshi, I want to thank you for pointing that out, because the more you sit back and you view this whole reparation thing, in all honesty, it shows the level that our people are on. It shows how we are not collectively together like other groups are to deal with issues like this. And that's the thing that makes me the most mad. How is it you could have other groups who have gotten reparations and then you see them moving forward and doing what they have to do? Now, you and I both know, when you have devils like Cuthheimer, who thank God is off the planet, speaking on these terms, he's basically laying the groundwork for his brothers and sisters to put our people in another trick bag. Because like you said, and like others have said, don't give me no money. I don't want no money, because I know fundamentally it's not going to change my life.
Right. And it's not going to change it. And it's not going to change the dynamics of the society. It will continue to function as it's been functioning. Sure.
Yes.
I agree.
Yes. But the thing is, why haven't we had our people come together and put forward an intellectual agenda, a conscious agenda, to be in a position to make the necessary demands so that we can get reparations that will uplift the whole race of our people that are here? See, we like to play the short game instead of the long game. In certain situations, you have to play the long game. You can't play the short game. And sadly to say, the mindset of most of our people are short game players. We got long game players. So this whole movement here with reparations is just something for the white man to keep us disorganized so they can do something else to put their foot in our behind. Because if they could give it, they could take it away. And the only way you can stop them from taking it away from you is if you have a strong organizational base to be in the position to punish them if you don't. Now, think about this. How did all other people get reparations? They got reparations because they had a solid base in order where that base could demand certain things, and if those things didn't happen, there could be some form of punishment.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, this whole reparation thing is supposed to be used as a tool for us to get our act together, for us to collectively figure out how we're going to move forward. And sadly to say, Brother Oshi, we as a people are not moving forward into African sovereignty. We're just trying to move forward into whiteness,
yep,
or a part of whiteness.
Yeah.
And the cracker don't want no damn parts of us because he really has no use for us.
Exactly.
His thing now is to deal with what he's dealing with. Who is he dealing with? The Babalui. Because he knows the Babalui is going to be that individual in this country that's going to cause him the most problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the numbers.
Right, because of the numbers.
The Babalui wants to do harm to him because the Babalui understands what he's doing to whereas they can't survive in their own country. Perfect example. Do you think nationalist of Venezuela is ever going to have any love for a goddamn cracker?
Never.
Do you think that he will come
Never.
Into this country and do whatever he has to do to make his life better, but in the back of his mind, he's always thinking about how I can go back home and place myself in a position to put my foot in the behind of a cracker? And you don't think that the Mexicans feel that way?
Mm-hmm.
You don't think that others feel that way? In that Latino mindset, we, the people of African hue on the dark shade, because that's just what the deal is on certain levels, we the only ones who want to forgive this damn cracker and figure out ways how to get closer to him.
Right. How we can peacefully coexist.
Yeah.
There's no peace.
How can you coexist with your enemy?
Never.
How can I get along with my enemy? I got family members who I'm enemies with that I don't get along with. I just have the intelligence to stay the hell away from them. I have no problems with it. But the point of the matter is this. We as a people are getting to the point to where this integration is basically destroying us. I had to say to a sister the other day, she got her a Yoruba husband. They separated. She all upset and everything. You know, she's a friend of mine. I like her. She's a good sister. She talking about how he not spending no time with his son, blah, blah, blah. You know me, brother. You know how I think. I told her you should be effing thankful that he not. Because how is he going to teach him how to be a black man? How is he going to teach him now to survive in this society? He too black, I told her. He too dark-skinned. He can't pass for your rule. So he in trouble. He in trouble now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, you know, at first she was all upset. But I said, you can get in your feelings. I don't care. The point of the matter is, you got to find a black man to educate him what it is going to be in blackness. Because the white folks don't want him. they ain't gonna want them, and if they do, they're gonna just try and use them based on what his talents are. Now, I'll prove the point to you, sis. Do his grandparents deal with him? Do his white aunts and uncles deal with him? See, when she answered the question, she calmed down the behind a little bit.
Yeah.
But the point of the matter is, a black mother can teach a little mixed race how to be a white woman. She's not gonna never be a white woman. I don't care how light she is. Now, if she real, real light, she may be able to pass, but she ain't going to be a white woman. She's going to be a confused negress. That's why it's an anomaly every now and then when you see one of these mixed-race mulattoes coming from a black perspective. Because somebody must have got a hold of them and told them pretty early, you ain't nothing but a nigger. Learn your history and your culture. The point of the matter is, the sickness is, for some reason, this so-called integration, diversity nonsense got them feel as though they're part of it until the world, they get out in the world and they get older and they get a foot in their behind, and then they can't recover. But lastly, now, do you notice how the sickness of this Rugal has caused the damage with this whole incident with Parkland? They got these Urugals from that incident now committing suicide.
Yeah.
Two of the kids that survived commit suicide, and then I just read one of the daddies just committed suicide. Now, people want to say you want to have sympathy for people like that. I say the hell with them. Think about my ancestors that jumped over that ship.
Yep.
Over the rails of that ship. Think about all of my ancestors in the sea.
Yep.
Think about the treatment of my ancestors who were captured and enslaved and brutalized here. The women that were raped, the men that were raped, the young children that was raped. All of that. I've never, ever had no sympathy when a cracker decides to kill his own or commit suicide. When you get to that point, you're really liberated because you have had to have studied somewhat to realize what has been done to us as a people. So anytime anything happened with these Urugus, listen, I just let it pass me by, and I go about my daily business.
I hear you.
But it amazes me how this Negro spends all of his time being sympathetic to someone who wanted to take you off of the face of the earth at a drop of the dime.
Yep.
So, Oshi, always, we got to get our act together, and we got to start thinking as Africans. Now, is this going to be the last week that you're going to do the show?
No.
You're going to do?
Yeah.
How many more days you doing?
My last show will be next week, Wednesday. I got Renoko Rashidi. He was supposed to come on Monday, but something happened, and he gave me a call. He said he can't do Monday, but he can do Wednesday. So Wednesday next week will be my last program with Renoko.
And you're going to be in Africa. You're going to be in Africa for how long?
14 days.
Oh, man, that's beautiful, man. Just make sure, you know, you take your modem AD.
Oh, yeah.
You get your updated shot, and you get... And you know you got to drink your bottled water. So yeah,
that's for sure. That's for sure. Believe me.
It's going to be beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
The weather's not going to be too hot.
Well, you know, I have a weather app on my phone. I always check to see what the weather is in Accra, and it's always been in the 80s. You know, it's been in the equator. It's always in the 80s.
You could deal with 80s when it's getting into the 90s and the 100s around June, July, August. That's when it's an issue, man.
Yeah.
You know? But hey, Oshi, finish it out, man.
All right, dear brother.
And listen, keep on doing the good work that you do, man. And you know, we'll wrap, because I gotta ask you what you thought about the show yesterday.
Okay.
All right, peace.
All right, peace. Yeah. I tell you, you know, this issue of reparations. Let me see if I get Wes on the phone. See what he sees. I know he's still hanging on. Wes, are you still there?
Yes, sir.
All right. What do you think about this issue?
Man, hey,
what do you think about this issue of reparations? Go ahead.
Yes, sir. It's the one thing good about this, people talking about it, man.
Yeah.
Put it in the app.
Yeah.
Because it's time now, man. It's time.
But
okay?
See,
and that's what I'm talking about. The
right.
Universe got time. That's the reciprocation of the universe, man.
See, I like it's the conversation. Time. But I don't like all these different conversations. I don't like all these different ideas and so forth. I love the fact that we're talking about it, but we need to sit down and talk collectively about it. There is no old school, new school reparations.
Right.
There's only one a mode and method to deal with, to go after reparations. And that is collectively. Now, how it looks, that's another story. That needs to be discussed. I mean, I know there are some people, man, who have been in poverty, serious poverty in this country, generation after generation after generation, and truly mm-hmm. that those people should, you know, and definitely could use some money. But
yes,
money in this society, you know, if all we get is money, and yet the structure of the society doesn't change, how the society is run doesn't change, and really nothing doesn't change with just the fact that you just got some money, then that money will be gone in months, weeks or months, if not sooner. And you'll be back in the same situation that you have always been in. So to me, the whole idea of reparations is to repair ourselves. Just like our good brother who we mentioned on the phone when Conrad was on the phone last week is Ken Bridges. A dynamic brother out of Philadelphia who started the Matai Network. You
yes,
know,
now that you bring up Ken Bridges, man, you know why the main reason they took him out, right?
Well, I think he was killed randomly. At least I hope that he was killed. Supposedly the DC sniper killed him.
Yeah, I can't go for that theory right there, man.
Well,
by them two brothers, man.
Right.
Drew Rupert's as good as this false flag.
And that's true, too. Wes, that's true, too. But I understand what you're saying, because Ken Bridges was a brilliant brother, good husband, good father, good brother to the community, believed in us, and had great ideas about. In fact, he was the one that was pushing the whole idea of eternal reparations. Reparations, where we got to repair ourselves before we go after reparations, because without us being repaired, we would foolishly get some money and give it right back to them. In fact,
don't think everybody going to do that. It's a lot of us that's smart. Like for instance, whatever I get extra now, I'm gonna invest in Uru and Ulu.
All
that's
right,
what I'm gonna do, man.
All right, that's a good thing.
That's my plan.
Get
Ulu, so I can. Get a good return in my investment, man. So a lot of us is gonna take what we got and use it for the quiet advantage, man. But one more thing, man. When you go on your vacation, man, let Dr. Rogers run the show, run the camp, man.
Dr. Rogers is excellent. I would love that. We're trying to work something out. We're trying to work something out because I definitely don't want the program to just to have pre-recorded programs. That would be cool if we could get some others.
Keep this thing moving, man.
Yeah, it'd be cool.
You know, playing sports. Next brother step up. You take a little break.
Yep.
Next brother sister step up, man. So I think Dr. Rogers is more capable, man. As long as you keep everything where he gets controls on every time, man. That would be some good practice for him, man.
Dr. Rogers got it together, just that unfortunately, the last two times that he had a problem, it wasn't his problem. It was a problem with the server. There was a problem with...
As always, man.
Yeah, it was a problem with that. But, you know, now we got it together, so... We got it together.
The truth, them devils don't want it out. Now,
right.
If you were talking about some buffoonery or something, it'll work every time. You see what I'm saying?
Right. But, yeah, you know, yeah, Dr. Rogers and... But there are others, too, that I'm trying to talk with and see what's happening. I know Brother Franklin Jones, who's a co-host on Wednesdays. We're talking with him.
Right.
We're talking with another sister, Marcia Lee. You know, she's had a program before when she lived in Cleveland, so we're talking with her.
Yes, sir.
You know, so we're going to get some other folks here on Time for an Awakening, and of course, Brother Elliot is getting some more people. So, you know, Time for an Awakening is going to be the bomb, man. If you tune into for various programs, you know, like I said, there's a live program every day now on Time for an Awakening. You know, some form of fashion.
See, it's coming out, man. The universe, like I say, is making this swap where we getting ready to come on top. Okay, well, that's the whole deal.
So
we got to do is keep doing what we're doing, because we rising to the top now, man. We supposed to. We've been at the bottom too long now.
I hear you. So, well, okay, my brother. I hope
peace
that
and blessings, man.
Peace and blessings to you.
Wednesday, man.
All right, peace. Let me see if I can find this here, and we're in the program with this particular piece, and I really enjoyed today. This Wednesday, definitely hope that my co-host, Brother Franklin Jones, will be with us, you know, my good brother, and hopefully he'll be with us. And then next week, and Monday and Wednesday, actually Monday I won't be here because I got to go get a man. No, Friday I won't be here. Monday I will. I'm sorry. I apologize. Monday I will be here. But this Friday and the Friday after, I won't be here. And so I appreciate you listening. I'm trying to find something that I'd like to leave out on, you know. And I can't find it. So, oh, well, we got to go anyway. So I hope that you have a good day. Hope you get a chance to do all the things you need and want to do, and I hope that the day is productive for you. You've been listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. This program deals with the issues that affect our people from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. The program is truly, unapologetically African, period. This program is designed to put something on our minds. This program deals with the issue of independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. Because if we're not talking about that, we ain't talking about nothing. The main thing that we should be about is how do we achieve these things, and then begin to put the energy and effort and work towards making those things happen. Brothers and sisters, we appreciate you listening. We hope that you'll tune in again. And definitely we'll come back from Ghana with a lot of good information, a lot of good stuff that I want you guys to be comprised of, so we can come together and begin to do for ourselves. Brothers and sisters, Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahodia. Bibi Fahodia means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, Bibi Fahodia. Peace, family. Have a blessed and wonderful day.